Welcome to the online dental mentoring service, where Dr. Derry Rogers and Associate Professor Michael Stubbs present clinical overviews and speak to dental leaders on the developing areas of modern day practice to assist you to develop and grow yours. Visit onlinedentalmentoring.com for more podcasts and training videos, all available free to our subscribers. We hope you enjoy today's show. Well, hi to all our listeners. We hope you're enjoying our free series of podcasts online at dentalmentoring.com.
Today, we're going to discuss the periodontal restorative interface in treatment planning. So, Derry, when you've collected all the data that you relate to and we've already discussed on, such as hard and soft tissue examination, done full periodontal charting, full mouth series and OPG scanning and imaging. So obviously you're talking about bite wings or periapicals or both, and intraoral and extraoral photography and any specialist referrals that you believe are appropriate. What are the steps that you go through then to prepare the diagnosis and treatment planning recommendations for a patient? You know, like, what's the next step?
Thanks, Mike, and it's certainly a great topic to overview. I feel we get too easily focused on the presenting symptoms of, say, a broken tooth or a pain issue, and we often forget the big picture. And especially in these COVID times, we can fall into the trap of only treating the broken tooth or trying to deal with a source of pain, which might be an endo open and drain, and then we fail to examine the whole mouth. Now, COVID will pass and our practices will return to their pre-pandemic business levels, I'm sure, but we've got to prepare for that by allowing patients to see their whole mouth rather than the presenting problem. So a simple series of intraoral photographs helps the patient see what's going on with their presenting complaint, as well as the other areas that may be heading the same way. So we sow the seeds of a full and thorough examination with future treatments. And by doing that, we start to create the long-term practice success. So I like to look at the mouth at about 20,000 feet rather than just at ground level, as in just the presenting complaint. And what I mean by that, Michael, is to take time to review the whole stomatognathic system in my timeline without the demands from staff and patients. So I prepare for my treatment planning sessions after clinic hours, and there's no one else around, and at least 1 to 2 days prior to the patient reattending for the treatment discussion. So once I've actually prepared the treatment plan, I can review it again the evening before or the morning of the session that the patient is actually coming in to have the case discussion and case presentation.
Derry, you know, I believe this is a very important point. A lot of us dentists, you know, we're under time pressure and you're expected to make quick decisions, when in fact those decisions can have an impact not just on the overall management of the patient, but also from the dentist's perspective. You know, too many dentists, you know, bow down to patient wishes at the treatment stage to tell them what the plan would be and give them a quote. And we know that costs are very important and reality when you're in private practice. But I think having the time to actually analyse the situation like you're indicating gives you the opportunity, I think, to look at the long-term impact and stability that you're going to create with those patients' mouths. And you're also then collecting your thoughts together with the evidence before you actually start talking about a real treatment plan.
Yeah, Mike, I've had on a few occasions patients who have demanded that I give them an idea of what the cost of treatment is actually going to be. And as much as I have never subscribed to the view that they should be costed at that stage, some have just pushed and pushed. And what I feel is going on in that situation is that they're not actually understanding the value of what a full and thorough examination is providing for them. And I have had on occasion, maybe once every couple of years, that someone has demanded a number and I literally have plucked a number from the air that I feel is appropriate to the cost of it. But it's obviously a, you know, if it's a reconstructive process, and a number that I feel is appropriate. And if that number scares the patient away, then really we were not at the point where we had any agreed value drivers that the patient could see and that I was delivering. But be that as it may, I think most patients come in, and I've never had somebody say they don't want to understand what's going on in their mouth when seeing the photographs that we've taken. So when I treatment plan, I've got all of my collected data in front of me, and I've developed a Word doc treatment plan template, and I have that on an adjacent computer. Now, we're preparing a webinar to actually show how this works, and the webinar will be available on our online site. So I've got all of my intra and extraoral photographs, my OPG, the full mouth series of x-rays, whether they're PAs or bite wings. And that way I can compare my visual exam with the internal x-ray exam that was taken at the new patient or even the recall exam. So let's not forget that there's many patients in our practice who come in on a regular basis for recall, and some of them we may have missed treatment over the years, and it gives us the opportunity to, I guess, catch up and review with them with what we've been possibly watching or what we feel is been going on in their mouths, but we've not had the opportunity to speak to them about it. So treat those recall examinations as a new patient examination. Collect the data, show the photographs to the patient, let them see what your concerns are, and then sow the seeds of them coming back for a discussion about what you feel are going to be the treatment options available. So having reviewed the photos and cross-referencing with the x-ray, I then start to develop my plan on the basis of the patient's aims as discovered from the dental history at the initial exam. So some just want an emergency dealt with and no follow-on, and that's a 30-minute procedure in my book. Some are in for recall, not aware of any other issues until they see them in photos, and I allocate an hour for those patients. And some want a full and thorough examination in anticipation of a smile makeover, a cosmetic overhaul, or dealing with long-standing issues that they know have just been patched up to date. And to me, I allocate 90 minutes for that appointment. So if you want to build the practice of your dreams, you only offer the type of treatment that you want to deliver. And the case presentation is the way to establish this mandate. So it's important for all of our patients to be screened through the phone call that comes into reception and offer the relevant time as it relates to these three different types of patients. So once we've established all of that, I've seen the patient, collected my data, then I review my patient's data in six distinct areas that have also got some level of overlap. So that's aesthetics, function, structure, biology, gingivae, and decay. So under the aesthetic assessment, I look at what's the current position of the teeth within the face. Is it a high smile line, a low smile line? What's the patient's aesthetic expectations? And to establish that on our dental history, I ask the patients to rate their current view of their smile out of 10 and give them a scale from 1 to 10 to circle the number that's relevant. And the second line of that questionnaire is, what's the expectation of their new smile out of 10? Now, somebody who comes in and doesn't have an aesthetic expectation will write 8 in the above line and 8 in the lower line. So there's no areas that I've got concern about there. But I have others who'll write 1 and put down 10 as the expectation. So if I've got a differential that's greater than 5, this should set off alarm bells. And we talk about vexatious litigants and the like, and I'm sure you've had some of those too, Mike. Give us a little bit of a heads up on these people that come to you with this sort of unrealistic expectation that the dentist has not been able to deliver to them.
Well, I think one of the common things that I've seen is this what we might call a somatic focuser, you know, that type of patient where you meet them for the first time, so therefore you're not familiar with them, you've gone through explanation, and the biggest thing is you can do the best work that you possibly can, but what you're doing and what the patient is expecting can be two quite distinct differences, and it can lead to a lot of difficulties in dealing with the patient and the dissatisfaction, even though you as a dentist have known what you've explained is exactly what you delivered.
Yeah, I guess.
And that's a hard one.
Yeah, I guess the classic, Mike, in that situation is someone who comes in believing that their life is going to change by having a new smile. And when the new smile that's delivered doesn't change their life, the somatic focuser comes through. So with that situation, how do you manage treating them? Do you refer them off to psychotherapy to assist them understanding what's happening?
Well, I think first of all, I try to get a bit of a read of what's happening, and then I might say things like something in the, along the lines anyway of, you know, like we can only do so much, and we can recreate, for example, in a smile, an aesthetic appearance aspect, we can do so much. But in the end, that we have limitations. And I also think that it's fair to say that you can ask other questions to the patient as you're going along in the engagement process with the examination, like particularly those patients that come in and tell you negative comments about previous colleagues. I mean, that's the ultimate warning bell, because I hate to say it, but usually you'll be the next one on the list. And I've found from my own experience, when I've had patients come and see me and tell me how some of my other specialist colleagues have been so terrible, I start to play my cards very close to my chest, because I realise that I would be the next one on the list.
Yeah, it's a good point, and I think we've all had a few of those. And the key, I believe, is to try to work them out in the early stages before we start delivering treatment, rather than after we get caught up in it and sending them off to somebody like yourself. So the easiest thing I have found is that adding to the questionnaire, rate your smile out of 10. And what's the expectation of your smile? And anything that's greater than 5, review, reassess, spend a number of consultation with the patients trying to establish what it actually is. And some of them do have grossly unrealistic expectations. And as we've said, we've just got to be very careful there.
I think one of the things you do too, Derry, which I really like, is, you know, when you're doing, say, a case of veneers, 3 to 3 or 4 to 4, you'll often make them, you'll print them a trial one. And you can actually place it on their teeth and they can have a look at it. And I think that is just such an important element, because in those patients where expectations is not realistic, you get a pretty good insight just by putting a temporary trial on, because you can always remove that and the patient's exactly as they were prior to coming to see you. And I think that's an important imperative, particularly when you're talking about the major rehabs where you're going to change someone's smile involving multiple teeth. I'm sure you'd agree with that.
Yeah, I've always had concern, Mike, with some of these digitising programs such as DSD, Rebel, Smile Cloud and the like, where the patient can see in 2D what it potentially can look like. And unless provisionalisation or templates are actually provided with photography, unfortunately, in a number of circumstances, the patient can feel that what was offered was not delivered. And even sometimes when it was delivered and you've got a somatic focuser, we've got to be terribly careful about those as well. But hence the aesthetic assessment is very, very important. We move on to the structural assessment, where we start to look at, do we have evidence of structural rule violations from a decay or an existing crown perspective? And commonly that involves ferrule issues. Do we have 3.5 millimetres of the support base, of which 1.5 must be sound tooth structure? If we don't, can we gain ferrule by ortho extrusion, crown lengthening, or sometimes extraction and an implant or bridge is a better option long term? We move to function. Is there evidence of a functional issue such as bruxing of either a horizontal or a vertical nature? And as we spoke about in a previous podcast, what's the possible cause of this bruxing and how are we going to manage this? Now, if we're about to put 6, 8, 10 glass reconstructions called veneers into a patient's mouth where horizontal or vertical bruxing is still evident, and we've not worked out the diagnosis of this or recommended that, because we don't fully understand the diagnosis, a splint is going to need to be worn, certainly at nighttime and in some situations daytime as well, we're going to find that within a 3 to 5 year period of time, we're going to have fractures, damage to the porcelain, and unhappy patients coming back demanding that we redo, or some situations returning the finances that they've actually provided for the delivery of the porcelain work. So please be very, very careful in this functional area. From a biological perspective, are there biological considerations we need to deal with? Extensive decay, potential root canal treatment, even existing root canals that may need retreatment if long-term success is high. We refer all of our retreatments off to our endodontic team with the proviso that if retreatment is carried out, what is the five-year survival rate likely to be? And what I'm, I guess, surreptitiously asking of the endodontist is, if this is a situation where we're not going to have long-term success, or we do not have enough ferrule to rebuild after retreatment, then the possibility exists that this tooth possibly should be removed and replaced with implant or bridge. As well as the biological considerations, I want to see whether there's existing crowns. Have they violated the biological areas? And often we'll see this venous pooling around the labial of anterior crown work, where the dentist has gone too close in the periodontal restorative space and violated that 2.5 millimeter golden zone from the osseous to the gingival or to the restorative margin. And if we do have that and requires osseous crown lengthening, which we or our periodontal colleagues may be doing, is this going to be to the betterment of the smile? In other words, if we've got well-positioned centrals in a medium to high smile line and one of them's going to need crown lengthening, maybe in that situation, orthodontic extrusion and then the crown lengthening has got to be considered. So each time I'm looking at these, I guess, complex and high-level anterior aesthetic cases, I'm going through this templated format to see whether my perio-restorative interface is going to be violated in any way. We move on to the gingivae and do a gingival assessment. Does the patient have a gummy smile? If it is a gummy smile, is this something that we're going to be speaking to them about in terms of an orthodontic referral with the possibility of orthognathic surgery for VME, a vertical maxillary excess? Is crown lengthening an option if we don't have an excessive amount of gummy smile display? And even in some situations, the use of Botox into the upper lip area to paralyze orbicularis oris and levator labii superioris obliqui nasi, allowing the lip to drape back down over that perio-restorative interface that's there, are all considerations that we need to look at when we're going to speak to the patient about our recommendations. So, of course, this needs to be referenced back to the dental examination. What's their current view of their smile and what is the expectation? And if we've got a great disparity, even up at five, and we're starting to see gummy smiles, we really need to make sure that the patient and ourselves are very clear on the expectations that they've actually got on what the end result is going to be long before we start to place local anesthesia and start to prepare teeth. So my last assessing area is decay. Is there an ongoing decay process, whether it be dietary or systemic in nature, such as diabetes, that is going to interfere with the long-term stability of what we're trying to create? All of our patients go through our hygiene program before they have access to restorative treatment to ensure that they're A, going to look after their mouth, B, going to look after the investment that I've put into their mouth, and C, we're not going to have situations in 3 to 5 years' time that are going to come back and have failed because the patient was not switched on to looking after the investment that we're going to provide them. So this needs to be the first line of active treatment with our soft tissue therapy and ensure we've got a stable environment to work within. It's got to be decay-free and gum health stable. So as you can see, we're able to evaluate all of our collected data and make diagnostic decisions related to the perio-restorative interface, where it is now and where we and the patient expect it to be at the end of the treatment. And that's how we assess preparing our treatment plan recommendations, which we then have a separate visit where we actually present it as a case discussion visit. So when I've completed my treatment planning and my Word doc, which summarizes all of these thoughts, that's printed and presented to the patient with a review of their photos again. So remember, this is the second time that they've seen these photos. The first time was to sow the seeds of concern at the new patient exam or the recall exam. And the second time is to discuss the options of treatment. And I present it to the patient and discuss these issues in my private office away from the threatening sounds and the busyness of an active clinic. very, very important, I believe, to ensure that that happens. The patient needs to focus on both the photographs and what's actually what we're talking about in terms of recommendations. And as we've mentioned in regards to personality profiling in an earlier podcast, I present these case presentations and discussions to the director's first appointment in the morning. That's when they're freshest and able to make active decisions. Socializes before lunch as they love to chat, and it gives me my lunch break to move into if needs be. And relators and thinkers at their most comfortable, non-threatening time. As we know, some people are morning types and others are evening types. So my reception has been trained in these areas, and they can work out what best suits our director, relator, socializers and thinkers. So we're going to be overviewing this case discussion and case presentation visit in a webinar that will follow in the next couple of weeks so that our listeners can understand how to do the treatment planning and how to present for case acceptance.
Derry, that's a great overview of the systems you've developed and follow to assist a patient to understand what their treatment options are to get a good outcome. I think what's really terrific too is you actually are really summarising a very nice multidisciplinary approach. You're not hesitant in getting specialist opinions when you feel they're necessary. You're recognising clearly that patients particularly going through or about to commence some expensive long-term treatment, you want the best outcome for your patient. And having the backup of a periodontist saying that they're periodontally stable, having the backup of an endodontist saying that tooth you're going to restore is sound, not cracked, and unlikely to fail probably in 5-10 years or longer, or in fact they might say, look, the prognosis is pretty poor, you've just saved yourself enormous grief in going through a scenario where you've got to then remove the tooth and then reevaluate the treatment and, of course, the patient's expectations not being met. So I look forward to seeing this next stage, Derry, and listening to you on the case discussion and presentation in the webinar you mentioned, and I hope our listeners will be too. And so, well, listeners, this is the end of another informative podcast. We hope you're enjoying them, and we look forward to welcoming you to the next one. So it's actually goodbye from me this time.
It's goodbye from me as well. We hope you enjoyed today's show. Thanks. And invite you to visit onlinedentalmentoring.com to subscribe to access more free podcasts in our video library and also be able to submit your questions for our panel discussion podcasts. And remember, tell your colleagues about us if you feel they benefit from the information that we presented. Until next podcast, take care.